very pleased to be here with you this morning, and thank you for the words of welcome. I would like to meet two or three goals with you this morning. First of all, and most importantly, I wanted to thank you. Secondly, I want to tell you a bit about myself, although you've heard a little bit, you've seen a little bit in your bulletin today. And thirdly, I wanted to give you my perspective on where the Anglican Diocese of Uruguay is at the moment and where I believe we need to go over the next few years. So I bring you greetings from the Diocese of Uruguay. People, some of you may know there, like Bishop Gilberto and some of the clergy, Father Alejandro, members of the Jones family that some of you may know as well as the people you don't, probably will never meet, who are worshiping Christians like you are. Bishop Gilberto and others in Salto, particularly, but in other parts of the diocese as well, fondly remember Kathy Harrison. They and we are so grateful that God called Kathy to Uruguay some years ago, and we are grateful for the ongoing support, both spiritual as well as financial, that the group, which now calls itself the Friends of Uruguay, has given to the Church of Uruguay over these years. Strengthened to some degree, at least, by Kathy and her family. And as I've been told, the Friends of Uruguay, the group was actually born in this parish, so for that I'm most grateful. I shudder to think where the Anglican Church in Uruguay would be now if it hadn't been for the support that you have given us. So please accept my personal thanks, as well as the thanks of those who belong to the Anglican family in the Church of Uruguay. Most of you don't know anything about me except what you heard this morning and a little bit you read. So let me briefly tell you a few things about myself, some of which you've already heard and some of which you've read in your bulletin. You can tell by my accent, I'm Canadian, not an American. My parents emigrated to Canada in the late 40s from Italy, hence my name, Michele, and I was born in Canada a short while after they arrived, so I like to say that I was named in Canada. My original plan for myself was to become a professor or a teacher, teaching languages and focusing especially on Spanish. That's why I have a master's degree in Spanish. Anyway, to make a long story short, I discerned that God didn't want another Spanish teacher in the world, at least not this one. And so I ended up earning a divinity degree and getting ordained in the Diocese of Toronto, where I served as a parish priest for a dozen years or so. I then moved to east of Toronto to the Diocese of Ontario, where the sea city is Kingston. Some of you may know where Kingston, Ontario. And I served there for another few years before I moved back to Toronto to the offices of the General Synod, where I served for a few years as provincial or the General Secretary. And that position, as you heard, allowed me to begin to use my Spanish a bit, especially because the Canadian Church has very strong links, very strong ties to the Anglican Church, the Episcopal Church in Cuba. And that's how I first got to know Bishop Miguel Tamayo, who I think has visited you at some point in the past. Marriage and children were also in there, as was becoming a widower. I have 5 adult children, all earning a living, I'm very happy to say. And as of October 2012, so not too long ago, I'm also happy to tell you that I have a wife, Vilma, whom I met in South America. I've been the diocesan bishop of Uruguay since August 1st last year, so I'm what they call a baby bishop. And that's actually why I'm here, because I was attending A.B. Bishop School, they offer in Canterbury. They don't call it that, but they that's just a very brief thumbnail sketch about me, and if you have specific questions about me, I can happy to answer them afterwards for you. As many of you likely know, and some dare say much better than myself, the Anglican Church in Uruguay has a kind of a double history. On the one hand, it's been there for about 150 years. And on the other hand, it's one of the relatively newer churches in that country. I say this because the first life that the church had was a very sheltered life. It was there, as it was in many other parts of the world, as a chaplaincy to people who came from England, who had immigrated to Uruguay, to work, some as entrepreneurs, some as professionals, some as laborers, all seeking to make a new life for themselves there. And so little, if any, attention was paid to the local population in terms of reaching out or inviting the local people to come into the Anglican fold, if I can call it that. And it's really been only in the last 20 or 25 years that the Anglican Church in Uruguay has become a diocese. The diocese is celebrating its 25th anniversary this year. And it's only been in this relatively short time that any thought has been given to the local Spanish-speaking people in terms of possible new members for the Anglican Church. Uruguay is a very secular country. By government law, they have no affiliation with any churches, they have no contact with any churches. And so it's a challenge for all churches to have any kind of impact on society in Uruguay. Now there are some, and perhaps only a few, and this would certainly be a theme that we can find repeated in our reading of the Bible, some who would long for what we might call the good old days in the Anglican Church in Uruguay. Some who would simply wish that the Anglican Church in Uruguay would be there to serve or to cater to the needs of those of British descent and heritage. And this is a bit of from my perspective at least, a bit of an unresolved inner conflict for some of these people. While on the one hand I can understand and even sympathize with people who long for this kind of a return to feeling perhaps the safety and the security and the simplicity of those good old days, on the other hand I also recognize and realize that if that were to happen, we might actually be moving back to what in the old days and still nowadays would be called colonialism, which would not be seen as a very good thing. So that's an inner conflict in some that may not even be recognized with themselves, which I certainly perceive when I'm speaking to some people there. At the same time, because the Anglican Church in Uruguay was essentially a chaplaincy to expats from England, many local people would not have felt any need or desire to join, nor was much emphasis placed on reaching out and inviting local Uruguayans to become Christian Anglicans. The cathedral in Montevideo, which has the name of Holy Trinity Cathedral, you wouldn't be able to get anyone to tell you what that is if you ask them to take you to Holy Trinity Cathedral. It's become known as the Templo Inglés, the English Temple. And so why, if I'm in Uruguay, would I want to go to that's a challenge for us, I believe, in Europe, in the Anglican Church in Europe. You're not going to find a whole lot of large numbers in the Anglican Church in Uruguay. I would say that we likely don't have more than 500 practicing Anglicans in the whole country. Now, some of you may know, maybe some of you better than I do, the Anglican Church in Uruguay has been sustained largely by the prayerful and financial support of people like yourselves from non-Uruguayan sources. And missionary societies. However, as you probably also know, the most mission societies have pretty well shifted their focus and are bringing their financial support all over the world to an end. And that means that the local church, local churches all over the world, like the Anglican Church in Uruguay, which you are used to receiving financial aid from abroad, now need to find other ways of staying alive. The Anglican Church in Uruguay needs to find ways of staying alive if it wants to keep moving forward with its mission and ministry. And the harsh reality is that the Diocese of Uruguay simply does not have the kind of income that would allow it, us, to give a decent wage to our clergy. We only have 10 clergy. As of January 1st of this year, this current year, all Anglican clergy in the Diocese of Uruguay are exercising their ministry on a voluntary basis, their parish ministry. None of them is getting any kind of financial remuneration from the diocese. At our last diocesan synod, which was at the end of November this past year, I laid out three goals which I encourage parishes to work towards during the next 2 years. And these goals might be seen against the backdrop, if you will, of what I like to call God's dream. You see, I believe that God had, since the beginning of creation, and God still has, a dream for all of God's creation, for you and for me within that creation. There's a hymn that has become sort of my theme song, my theme hymn in the Canadian hymnal. And the first stanza of the hymn, and you'll forgive my singing voice, goes like this. When long before time and the worlds were begun, there was no moon and no sky and no sun, when all was deep darkness and night reigned supreme, and even our Maker had only a dream. I firmly believe that both my individual role, as well as the church's corporate role, is to discern what God's dream is for him or herself, as well as for the church as a whole. And once we've begun to discern God's dream, you and I are called to do our part in helping to bring that dream to fruition, to reality. In Uruguay, I believe that God is calling us to spread the word about God's love for all of us as we have known and experienced it through Jesus. And this is certainly not unique to Uruguay. It's part of God's dream for all of us, for all Christians. In other words, God is calling us there, just as God is calling you here, to let others know about the relationship that God wants to have with each one of us. I'm talking about, to use jargon words, I'm talking about evangelism, telling others about this loving God and inviting them to come and to experience this for themselves. And so I've invited each congregation in the Diocese of Uruguay to set a goal of expanding its membership by 25% over the next 2 years. And at the same time, along with the numerical growth, I've also challenged each congregation to grow in terms of its givings. And I've suggested a goal of 15% over the next 2 years of annual. And I know this will be easier for some parishes and congregations than for others. And I've also invited each congregation to look at what it does have, especially in terms of physical and material goods. We say that we believe that God has gifted all of us in one way or another, both in our individual lives as well as in the corporate life of the church. In terms of the church in Uruguay, the Anglican Church in Uruguay, one of the tangible gifts that I believe we have is that we have some property, some building. And so I've invited each congregation to pray and to think about how this gift might be used more effectively. So, for example, the cathedral in Montevideo has a hall which is beside it, which is called the Fon Hall. Could this place be more effectively used? Could there be, for example, some student housing built atop of the Fon Hall? Could we use another piece of property that we own to put up a small condominium? Or could we use another piece of property to put up a small school? Each congregation has been asked to try and discern some possible use for what may now be lying dormant or underdeveloped. And what I then propose to do is to develop these properties. Not so that we can become property managers or property developers, but so that we can use this as a means for helping us to finance the carrying out of our real mission, which is, using the words from today's gospel, which is to be salt in our time and place. And we can spend a whole lot of time talking about what this might mean. Tempting as that is, I won't go there, especially since some conversation we had last evening with some people about the length of sermons in churches. Suffice it to say that being salt means at least two things from my perspective. Being salt means realizing that we are important. You're worth your salt. Value. And being salt also means making a difference wherever we may be. And so we can do a whole sermon with that, but we won't. I'll leave that for another time. Developing the properties will certainly not be an easy proposition. However, I know that if it is part of bringing God's dream to its fruition, then God will help in finding ways to make this happen. And I could go on at this point, but I'll stop here. I want to repeat my words of thanks to you for your support in the mission and the ministry that goes on in the Diocese of Europe. May God bless you, and may God bless us in your will. As together we continue to work at discerning God's dream and to do our part in making that dream come to reality in Jesus' name.